It's the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast, where we spend time chatting with expert gardening guests and we ask for their favorite tip. I'm Christy Wilhelmi. Thanks for joining me. My guests today are John and Molly Chester, the owners of Apricot Lane Farms and stars of the new documentary, The Biggest Little Farm, which captures the Chesters' journey transforming barren land into a biodynamic paradise. Molly was a professional chef and cookbook author, and John was a wildlife photographer and is the director and producer of this new film. Together, they run Apricot Lane Farms. Thank you both for chatting with me today.
Oh, we're excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And we are here at Apricot Lane Farms, and I just completed the tour, which is just stunning. I haven't been here since I came for a volunteer day back in 2013, and things have grown in so nicely.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. This film, it's incredible. Honestly, it's one of the best movies I've seen about agriculture and our food system in years. I haven't seen anything this great in years. Wow. You've managed to engage and educate the audience about permaculture and biodynamics, both of which center on principles of working in harmony with nature, but without ever mentioning those terms or being preachy. So what led to taking that approach?
I think that's such a great thing for you to sort of bring up, because there was a lot of thought that went into a sensitivity around words. And these methods of farming and these beliefs around the ecosystem have become like these religious battles. And, you know, there is no way to define in one word what an ecosystem is and what it needs, except through the lens of diversity and awareness for the interrelation between all those things. And to start to use words and methods of farming to describe what we were trying to do would have taken away from the potency of people realizing it for themselves.
And that's exactly what happens. I mean, we are brought along the journey of your exploration and discovery and realizations of what is needed on this land. It's really, it's fantastic. And you seem so calm during the process, I have to say.
We were not calm.
I was thinking, because this leads to my next question, because I have so many. There were at least 20 times during the film where I had to pause because I got a screener. And I was like, how the heck did they get that shot? You know? And it feels so, well, it's so clear that observation is part of this, the film and the operation of this farm. John, I just want to ask you, because you're an Emmy-winning director and a photographer. Can you describe the process of shooting this habitat?
I think in order for people to understand how profound the words interconnected ecosystem are, they have to see it in a really close-up sort of way. And over the 8-year period, what was offered to me was a clue as to the rhythm of when things were going to happen and the replicatability of that. Like, I knew where the red-tail hawk would nest. I knew the routine of the pig and the rooster every night before they went to sleep that was so unbelievable no one would ever believe it unless I captured it. I understood the whole process of these things because I kept seeing them happen over and over. And so I got multiple chances to get these shots that are impossible to get if you're only spending 6 months someplace. Yeah. And I got to spend 8 years perfecting, you know, those examples to illustrate the point of the powerful interconnected things that are happening simultaneously on the farm.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Now, the film really portrays the two of you as partners in this, which that speaks to my heart, that you're doing this together. I'm curious to know what the division of labor is like on a typical day. Molly, I want to ask you, because this whole farm was birthed from your dream as a chef to cook from the garden. What does a typical day look like here on the farm, work-wise and play-wise and cooking-wise?
Yeah, well, it's always different, and it's very different the first 2 years of the farm and then the middle and where we are now. Where we are now is a little abnormal because we're having to birth this film out of the world. But I think typically John is focused on the soil, and I'm focused on the fruit and where that goes. John's focused on the animals. I'm focused more on the plants and the garden. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where it falls naturally. We were one time in the orchard and...
driving.
Yeah, we were driving on a little cart and... I looked over and I noticed that John the whole time had been staring down at the cover crop, and the whole time I had been staring up at the fruit. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly who and what we are.
We're like, oh, that's how we can survive as a couple. We'll just divide
and divide and conquer.
Yeah, yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's great. And so when, as the seasons pass,
yeah.
So right now there are lemons and there's citrus on the trees.
Sure.
There are always eggs, mm-hmm. and I guess you've processed some meat somewhere
sure.
on the property. So what is a typical meal looking like these days?
A meal? Well, we do have a culinary team that I work with on the farm, and uh-huh. so they're always using our meats. That's what's always used here. Mm-hmm. And then whatever's coming out of the garden. So right now we're coming into spring, so it's getting more fun. I find that there's always one spot in the year that's a little dry, and it's
yeah.
right before spring comes in.
Uh-huh.
And so it's always fun when you get more than citrus.
Right, exactly.
And so they're working with our peas, snap peas now, and it's always just fresh. I our chef here now, she comes from a background of vegetarian cooking and vegan cooking,
mm-hmm.
which I find interesting because I was a vegetarian for a really long time too.
Uh-huh.
And I love her just ability to use vegetables in any way, because you can layer meat back into that,
right.
and that's no problem. But to really grasp the understanding of how to cook vegetables properly in a number of ways is
yeah.
is great. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And that segues me into my next question. Now, the film focuses mainly on the intensive problem solving that
mm-hmm.
you had to use in the fruit orchards and with the livestock. But at Garden Nerd, we focus primarily on organic vegetable gardening. And so I have questions about the Apricot Lane vegetable garden that wasn't as much of a feature in the film as I would have hoped. But that's just me.
You could do a whole series.
You could do a whole film on,
yeah.
on just the vegetable garden. So, you know, there's a saying in permaculture that is a reference to pest control that says you don't have a grasshopper problem, you have a turkey shortage. But
yeah,
that kind
love
of thing
that.
Is,
yeah.
it's sort of hard to do in a vegetable garden unless you're, you know, quarantining
yeah.
things. So how do you deal with pest control in the vegetable garden?
That's actually a really great question, because one of our big issues in the orchard was we had to deal with morning glory. And the way we basically did that was the focus and development of cover cropping, and in a very, very dense way.
Mm-hmm.
And that just...
It choked them out?
Yeah, it was just, they didn't have it. And it was a sequential, John really led that, but it was a sequence of planting.
It was a successional planting strategy that ultimately
yeah.
did it.
Oh,
yeah.
Very good.
And so that worked,
uh-huh.
but you really can't replicate that same thing in the garden.
No.
And so once we started seeing morning glory, it was like, oh, what the heck? I'm really starting to get scared by this, because this could be everywhere. And now we're dealing with nut grass in that kind of way, where it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Mm. But the thing is it's still, and we try a million different types of approaches. We do use chickens that
mm-hmm.
are, we have 8 chickens who, we don't sell those eggs because they don't technically rotate, but they do get all the scraps from the garden all the time. And we pull them out and put them in different areas where we're dealing with a pest problem that we...
Are they in a chicken tractor?
Yeah,
are they free range?
We'll put them in electric fences.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because we don't want them around other crops that we may be harvesting.
Right.
But like
yeah.
when we had... what was the recent one? It was actually in the film.
The weevils.
The weevils. Weevils, yeah. When we had... Was it weevil or weeble?
Weevils.
Weevils.
There you go.
Not weevil.
I would love to see weevils.
Yeah.
They weevil and they wobble, but they don't.
Yes.
Yeah, so we used the chickens for that. And in the beginning, when we were building the soil of the garden, we actually rotated sheep through the garden before we planted crops.
Okay.
We actually grew grass and legumes and rotated sheep through it.
Oh, very good.
Because it was sand.
Yeah, and I was here in three...
Yeah.
So, no, go ahead.
No, it's just you have to do more of, like, companion planting focus.
Yeah.
You have to... let me think of what that was the main
and
thing.
It's habitat, too. It's actually
yeah.
pollinator beneficial, you know, things that are going to bring in pollinators and beneficials, and really learning, like, what that pest is, what eats that pest, and then that predator. What does that predator eat?
Yeah.
Bring that thing here and make that predator want to live in your garden or on your farm year-round.
Yes. Right. And variety selection and just really growing what works on your farm. So don't bring yourself a pest. Gophers are a big challenge out there right now, and we're using mesh baskets for, like, perennials. But for annuals, we don't really know what to do. And so I'm starting to look into some other things there. I'll let you know if anything works.
Are you trapping them?
We do trap.
Okay.
Yeah.
At my community garden, we have a baseball field above us, and so we have to trap the gophers. It's the only way.
And we compost them.
Yes.
So it's not,
well, I mean, the rule of thumb, I don't know if you know this, you stuff them back down the hole, and the smell wards off the other gophers.
Oh, I've heard that. We do that sometimes, and then we've also found that the coyotes then dig them up.
Yeah.
But I think that makes a lot of sense because you're helping those nutrients go back into the soil.
Yeah.
But we also have tons of owl boxes and great barn owls and gopher snakes and weasels and badgers have come back to this farm.
That's so wonderful.
But we also find, even in the garden, that it's a bit cyclical. Like, you have last year it was morning glory, and I was, like, really nervous, didn't know, and it was getting stronger and stronger. And this year, the morning glory is kind of not there, and the nutgrass is going crazy. So you do have to not freak out too much, too. Just, like, let it go a couple seasons and do your best and see what happens and believe that it's not going to go to that place that your brain's telling you it might.
Yeah, and that really, that's what I meant when I said you seemed so calm in the film about it. It didn't look like you were freaking out to the point that you were grabbing the bottle of, you know, Roundup or whatever. And
year 3 and 4, it got so bad that there was, like, some team members that were, like, thinking that was what we had to do.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of tension with a couple of individuals on the team that they were out of solutions, so they just wanted to give it up. And Molly and I were like, oh my, we can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can't go backwards.
And calm, I feel like, comes to not overly romanticize it. We went through our own darkness through this project, and we went through darkness within each other of having, you know, facing each other's darkness as a couple.
Sure.
And so when you've kind of faced the black, you know, then you're like,
you come out on the other side with either you're jaded or hopeful, one or the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So it is tip time. I would invite both of you to share one of your favorite tips with the Garden Nerd audience. Molly, do you want to go first?
I should have thought of that because you gave me a clue that would happen. You go first.
I don't know how relevant this is, but I have loved the idea of growing buckwheat as a way to suppress weeds while you take a break.
I love
it. Because it germs in like 4 to 9 days, and it's super beautiful. It's feeding the bees, and the first frost will kill it. And what we normally do in order to build soil is we will plant buckwheat, and at the same time we'll do some annuals underneath. And after the buckwheat does its thing and dies, those annuals have started or even perennials, grasses, have started to germinate. And you end up with this really beautiful cover crop that doesn't have all the, you know, the morning glories and the other things that may want to, pigweeds that may want to compete. So, yeah, I like using buckwheat in multiple ways to compete and control things.
Yeah, it's a great, I use it as usually a summer kind of bridge crop because it's usually our crops finish up in the heat of summer. And then there's nothing until it cools down again for fall. So we'll do a 2-month buckwheat crop.
And that's good. And it's good. It surfaces, phosphorus.
Oh, so it pulls it up from deep
below. And you can let it trickle down. You
know, excellent.
It decomposes.
Because they say we are running out of phosphorus on this planet.
It is finite. Right. We are, but it's finite, but not to buckwheat.
Right. Awesome. And
totally. And I think for me, I would say if listeners don't already do this, to learn the process of lactofermentation if you're going to start growing your own food.
Yeah.
Because just with simple saltwater solutions, you can create so much good beneficial bacteria in your food and then strengthen your gut colonies. And so, and then preserve your food throughout the year.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask a follow-up question on that. So what's your favorite thing to lactoferment?
Well, sauerkraut is such an easy thing, but I would say carrots. Carrots with a little bit of ginger is a really nice, easy starter ferment.
And is that by any chance on the website?
Oh, I wish it was. Let me think of one that, so Bikavas is another one.
Oh, that's on there. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's on the website. I hope it is.
It is. I saw it.
Okay, yeah. Good. It's Bikavas is a great one because that's going to really strengthen. It's for liver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So always say it's a little tonic. You can have a little bit in the morning, a little bit at night.
Nice.
It's great.
Can I say one thing promotionally?
Of course.
In theaters May 10th.
Yes, and that's my next question is how do people find you and when does the film come out?
So fantastic question. Funny you should ask. The movie is The Biggest Little Farm, and it's in theaters in New York and L.A. starting May 10th, and then it goes out wide everywhere, not just North America, but throughout May through spring and summer, it'll go out throughout the world in theaters.
Excellent.
And then you can find the film at The Biggest Little Farm movie.com, and then we are at Apricot Lane Farms with an S at the end
.com. And people can come here for tours if they want to.
Yeah, tours on our website.
They can come for tours. John has a children's book coming out about Emma the Pig, and that's coming out on May 15th called Apricot Lane.
It's called The Biggest Little Farm Saving Emma the Pig.
There we go.
Aw, that's wonderful.
It's an illustrated children's book.
When they see who Emma is, they will want to rush out and get that book.
Yeah, she is one of the stars of the documentary The Biggest Little Farm.
Yes. Well, thank you both so much for being on the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast. Do you have any other social media links you would like to share before we sign off?
I think our Instagram.
Yeah, if they go on our website, it has the Instagram and Facebook link, both of which are very active, but our Instagram specifically.
We're very active. Yeah, we're really active on our Apricot Lane Farms Instagram and our Apricot Lane Farms Facebook page. Lots of stories, little short films, and just cool pictures about the characters that we work with here on the farm.
Excellent. All right, Garden Nerds, you'll find a link to Apricot Lane Farms on GardenNerd.com this week. We'll also post details about the film, and we'll point you towards Molly's great recipes and the farm's social media feeds. That's it for this week. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen. Visit us for tons of free gardening information at GardenNerd.com. Show your support for this podcast and the other free stuff on Garden Nerd by becoming a Patreon subscriber. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter under GardenNerd1, on Facebook as GardenNerd.com, and of course, our Garden Nerd YouTube channel. Happy gardening!